This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, just days ago, we watched with lightning speed a complete militant takeover of the ancient and proud country of Syria. Its government and president deposed. No one knows now what the future holds for the Syrian people, a nation that has been destabilized, attacked, terrorized, occupied, and sanctioned for over a dozen years we thought was on the path to recovery and reconstruction. But that all changed overnight and literally. Now, armed groups that failed for over a dozen years succeeded, and so why now? And why so suddenly? And who are the key benefactors and players involved? And what are the geopolitical ramifications for West Asia? Are some of the questions we'll be asking in your Spotlight program. And now this quick news package before we introduce our guests.
Speaking to thousands of people from various walks of life on Wednesday, Ayatollah Khamenei denounced the United States and Israeli regime as the principal architects behind the current turmoil in Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei rejected speculations that the collapse of the Syrian government would undermine the resistance front. He emphasized the escalating pressure from Israel and its Western allies would only serve to strengthen the resistance front. Ayatollah Khamenei said Iran's military presence in Syria and Iraq was advisory, meaning the establishment of central headquarters, determining strategies and tactics, being on the battlefield when necessary, and most importantly, mobilizing the youth of those regions. He said this was aimed at confronting the Daesh terrorist group, which would bomb of insecurity in the region. The political situation in Syria following the militant takeover of the country remains volatile. However, U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have hailed the Syrian government's collapse as a historic opportunity, with escalating Israeli airstrikes worsening the already dire humanitarian crisis in the Arab country. In recent months, the resistant factions in Lebanon and Gaza have shown remarkable resilience against Israel and its Western allies. And now, Israeli escalation is likely to ignite a wave of resistance among the Syrian people, who have demonstrated their resilience against decades of conflict and terrorism.
And now for our guests. Fouad Izadeh, a university professor and political analyst, joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. And Kim Sharif, activist and lawyer, joining us from London. Hello to the both of you, and welcome you both to the program here. I guess we'll start in the Iranian capital, Tehran, with you, Professor Izadeh. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution just today said, without a doubt, that Syria's collapse can be traced back to the planning intelligence rooms of Washington, D.C. and Tel Aviv. Your initial thoughts, please.
Well, I don't think we need to bring a lot of evidence for this fact. I encourage your viewers to switch to CNN after this show. Mm. For the last number of days, CNN has become the media outlet for the group that has taken over Damascus. I remember in 2001, the interview that they had with Hamid Karzai at the time that he was running a restaurant in the United States. He had an Afghanistani food restaurant. So they brought this guy because of his connections to the CIA. They flew him to Pakistan. From Pakistan, he went to inside Afghanistan. And the first time that people heard of him internationally was when he gave an interview to CNN. So when I saw Mr. Jolani's interview with CNN, this time I remember what they did in Afghanistan, basically copying the same thing. So this is a function that CNN has. On international matters, CNN follows orders from the U.S. government. You watch the coverage for the last number of days, you see a very sympathetic coverage. You know, the Israelis and Americans are bombing sites in Syria for the last number of days. More than 500 sites have been bombed. And in order to not cover that news very much, they are talking about other things that is more or less in line with what the people in Damascus, the people who have taken over Damascus, want them to do. I think what happened in Syria was planned for at least 2 years. This is a joint American-Israeli-Turkish operation. And as you know, Turkey is not an independent country, especially when it comes to its military wing. They're under NATO. Turkish generals other officers are trained by the Americans. Yeah, and the support that this organization got from Turkey and the support that they got from the United States and Israel is extensive. They basically worked as the ground forces for the Israeli Air Force. So they took over areas inside Syria. Now the Israelis starting the second phase of serious destruction, bombing places. And the reason they are bombing is that they realize that the young people in Syria are not going to tolerate a government that is in line with American and Israeli plans. Mm. Syrian people, Syrian youth are very proud. They hate the genocidal regime as much as anybody else in the world. Their land is occupied by the Israelis. They are not going to tolerate a government that is going to follow orders from the United States or Israel. They're not going to sit silent and see their country be occupied by the Israelis. So sooner or later, they will rise up if the government in Damascus falls in line with American and Israeli plans. And that's why the military sites in Syria are being bombed, because the Israelis and Americans realize that those weapons could reach the youth in Syria when they oppose a puppet government, if it comes to that. Okay. Another scenario is that there are elections in Syria, and that's what I think Iran is hoping, to have two elections in Syria. And if you have elections, then that government is not going to be a U.S. puppet government. So overall, I think the speech of Ayatollah Khamenei gave us a lot of clues on what Iran is planning to do, and I think established a lot of facts that you would not hear on corporate media in Western countries.
Thank you for your opening thoughts there, Professor Izzadi. Kim Shadif, welcome to the conversation, and thank you for your patience, ma'am. Now, within minutes of the military, the militant takeover of Damascus and, in essence, of Syria, Israel started with its further occupation, with its airstrikes, to Professor Izadi's point, over 500 targets, and some put it near 700 immediately, within minutes. I mean, from your perspective, was this pre-planned, premeditated, or was it just seized opportunity amongst chaos?
No, I mean, good evening to you both. It's quite clear that this was premeditated and pre-planned, and a lot of hard work has gone into this. And you need to take into account the fact that, for example, here in the UK, just over a week ago, there was an arrest of members of the PKK as a banned terrorist organization, which led to a huge kerfuffle in the streets of London within the Kurdish community opposing the arrest. And it seems to me that that was an act to appease Erdogan, to cooperate with them in the carrying out of this heinous terrorist crime against the state of Syria. And now the issue is it is being planned and prepared, and everything is obvious, because an operation of this scale requires a great deal of thinking and preparation and studying and analyzing and gathering a lot of data. And so yes, I do agree that this was pre-planned and it was designed. Now, let's not forget that these people have been shouting on top of their lungs for nearly over 10 years that Assad must go. Why must Assad go? Well, Assad must go because Syria is friendly with the Axis resistance, and that is something that is very disturbing for them, and they couldn't live with it. Secondly, Syria is full of resources, oil, gas, and lots of other mineral resources. If Syria were left to do its own conducting of its running its country, Syria would probably be one of the richest countries in the area, probably more richer than European countries and others. And they want to put their hands on the resources of Syria. And all of that is foregone conclusion. Now, what we need to be asking are serious questions as a matter of utmost international legal principles urgency. Is the connection between imperial powers and terrorist outfits such as Daesh and Al-Qaeda, which has been now, beyond any reasonable doubt, has been proven that there is a deep connection, and that these terrorist outfits are being used as an enforcement mechanism for imperial agendas. And that is a very, very dangerous, frightening thing to be aware of in the world. And the whole world has been, in one hand, united to fight terrorism. And these terrorist outfits are the most dangerous, evil individuals on earth. We have seen the heinous crimes they have committed in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, in Libya, elsewhere. And therefore, they need to be contained rather than supported. Now, there is the connection between the Zionist entity and terrorism has been established on live TV with a Mehdi Hassan interview of a senior official of the Zionist entity regime, admitting that they have been supporting the terrorists by providing them with medical aid during their rampage in Syria and Iraq. Now, that is a very important question that needs to be investigated thoroughly. And now that we see that the U.S. is now rebranding it, in fact, covering up all its serious crimes, I mean, crimes including the beheading of a 12-year-old innocent child at the back of a truck for the whole world to see. Have they forgotten what they have done to the Yazidis? Have they forgotten what they have done to the women they've been selling in the streets? This is a very serious crime on the international platform that needs investigation, not by the usual suspects, not by anybody who has a hand with these terrorist Takfiri evildoers, but by independent international bodies affiliated to the General Assembly to conduct a thorough investigation into the connection between these terrorists and certain countries who have been using them for their imperial purposes. Because this is very important, because as it's affecting now today Syria, it can affect anybody else. This is a testing ground now for humanity. If this matter is not contained and dealt with, then it will be operated on elsewhere in Africa, in Asia, anywhere else the imperialists decide to take hold of. Therefore, there has to be an international public inquiry into the connection between terrorism and these countries. With evidence. The evidence is now a foregone conclusion. It's all over. Okay. It's an open and shut case. And as a result of that, the case of the currently running case of the ICJ has to include a charge of terrorism against the Zionist entity, because that is using terrorism for its political gains.
We don't have, and so I'm Ms. Sharif, let me come back to you in just a second.
Of our Muslims have had their lives destroyed.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Professor Izad, you hear this rhetoric out of the White House, out of the Zionist leadership, saying that this militant takeover of Syria has dealt a death blow to resistance in the region. But you don't hear that sentiment, not out of Tehran, not out of Damascus. I mean, to your point earlier, not out of the young Syrians, not out of Lebanon or Sana'a or Baghdad. Why?
The resistance has been able to free Iran from American and Israeli occupation in 1979. That was the Islamic Revolution. They managed to free southern Lebanon through Hezbollah in the year 2000. If Americans were successful in their occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, we would be living in a different Middle East. They were not. If they were able to succeed in Syria in 2011-2012, we would be facing a different Middle East. So it is very natural for the Americans and Israelis to be upset with the resistance front. The resistance front was created to oppose American hegemony and the Zionist hegemony in this part of the world, and they're successful. And I think the happiness that you see in Western capitals is going to be short-lived because of the Syrian people. The only way they can achieve their goals in Syria is to have a dictator running Syria. And I don't think the Syrian people will accept that. The other option is that they will turn Syria into another Libya. If they cannot impose a dictator, they may want to create chaos. This is what Ayatollah Khamenei said in a speech about a month ago, that Americans like two types of system. One is a dictatorship, so they can bribe the dictator and push him to this side that they want, or they want chaos. So if they cannot establish a dictatorship in Damascus, then they may want to turn Syria into another Libya. And even if they do that, which is very bad for the Syrian people, you know, the Syrians are tired of all the difficulties that they have been witnessing coming from the West. But if they do that, then you're going to see a Syria where the young people are going to basically become empowered and establish areas, free areas in Syria, and then fight with the forces that are trying to destroy Syria. So overall, I'm quite optimistic about the future. I think sooner or later, you're going to see the Zionist child killers stopping the genocide that they are conducting. They cannot continue with that genocide for much longer. They are not going to be able to destroy Hamas. Hamas is an ideology. You may be able to destroy a group, but you cannot destroy a nation. We have seen in Lebanon the level of resistance was such that the Israelis had to go for a ceasefire. They didn't do it because of ethical standards, because we know they don't have any ethical standards. They had to do it because of the pressure that they were receiving from the resistance in southern Lebanon. And sooner or later, I think in Syria, you would see a situation where the experience in Palestine and Lebanon in opposing American hegemony is going to be repeated.
Okay, we're almost out of time. I want to get this last question out to Ms. Shadif. So suppose this new Syrian government plays the tune to the West, to their dictates or whatnot. Do we see Turkey and the U.S. and Israel stop their occupation? Do we see Israel stop its attacks? Do we see the Syrian people have their borders respected, enjoy prosperity, and live peacefully?
Highly unlikely. I mean, the Zionist regime has had a significant defeat over the last 14 months or so, and it has lost its standing in the world, and now it's trying to kind of reestablish some kind of 1967 gains as it did then. And so I don't think it's going to leave, because notice, as soon as the terrorist outfits moved into Damascus, you see the Israeli tankers moving into Syrian borders to grab land. When the Zionist entity grabs land, it never lets go. And that's what's going to happen. They're not going to let go of Syrian land. Ditto for the Turks. The Turks have had a problem with the issue of the PKK, appear to be based around that area. And they want to be taking, they always wanted to take land of Turkey. One of the reasons why Assad refused to speak to them was because of that occupation of his land. And now they are highly likely to expand. And because, like I said before, there are resources, mineral resources at issue here. And these people are ambitious to put their hands on that and take it for themselves, as they've been stealing it anyway for a long time. Now they just want to increase and up the game furthermore. And in terms of what's going to happen to East Syria itself, I can't see it having a peaceful, democratic, and normal situation, because these Takfiri guys can't coexist with other human beings, because that is their nature. They are Takfiri, and they all they know is violence and beheadings and chopping off limbs and that kind of thing. What needs to happen is now is reform of the international platform, namely the UN, and once an inquiry is carried out and established that there is connection between these terrorist outfits and some countries, those countries who are at the Security Council need to be removed. There has to be a reform of the Security Council, and any country who is established who have been aiding and abetting and working with terrorism has to be removed from the Security Council.
Because I don't mean to cut you guys off, but to the both of you, I really apologize. We are out of time. It has gotten the better of us, so I appreciate having you both on. Professor Fuad Izadi joining us there from the Iranian capital, Tehran, and also Kim Shadif, activist and lawyer joining us from the British capital, London. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested to know about history, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune in to IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
According to experts, the Israeli bombing of the Lebanese capital Beirut and its suburbs with missiles containing depleted uranium and chemicals not only aimed to destroy the infrastructure of the country, but also poisoned Lebanon's soil, air and water. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Locals said Israel has been violating the ceasefire agreement in Lebanon without break, deliberately targeting civilian areas in southern Lebanon. Despite drones incessantly buzzing over their homes, people in southern Lebanese villages say they will not abandon their homes after returning following the ceasefire reached recently. Speaking from Etorun, Abu Reda told Press TV that last Monday, 2nd of December, the Israeli army deliberately fired upon him and several of his friends who had gathered in the old town of the village to inspect their homes. They were lucky to survive the attack. Locals said early on Friday, 6th of December, heavy attacks took place that continued throughout the morning. The Israeli military fired machine guns at villages in the central sector of southern Lebanon, including Eta al-Shab and Ramiya. Overnight, several shells struck homes in Etorun, resulting in damage. At approximately 8 a.m. local time, Israeli military launched a rocket attack at Etorun, which locals described as a continued violation of the ceasefire agreement. The explosion instilled panic among residents, prompting some to evacuate their homes temporarily. Locals said since Friday morning, Israeli military vehicles and tanks have been active in the village of Etorun, which had already endured heavy machine gun fire overnight. Abu Reda is present in the southern villages of Etorun and Bent Jubail every day. He said the Israeli army has been violating the ceasefire agreement on a daily basis since it was announced late last month. According to some reports, the Israeli regime has breached the truce agreement more than 160 times, with the Lebanese resistance movement responding once as a warning to the occupation. He said here in the village of Etorun and in nearby towns like Ma'aruna Ras, there are either air raids or machine guns fired at the towns and the people there. During the day, the gunfire and raids are limited, but during nighttime, the Israeli army starts randomly firing machine guns. He added, "I'm telling you about heavy attacks on houses and neighborhoods. Some of the families whose homes still stand returned for winter. They have no other place to go. They are civilians minding their own business, but the Israeli army savagely attacks them and terrifies them at night." Abu Reda added that the village of Etorun, like the town of Ma'aruna Ras, Yarun and parts of Bent Jubail and Mais al-Jabal, have been heavily damaged from booby traps used by Israel to detonate neighborhoods, as well as heavy shelling, raids and the use of phosphorus bombs, which have rendered them uninhabitable. He said, "There are piles of rubble everywhere you go throughout the town. In center areas, such as the old town, the oldest neighborhood in the village, the entire landscape consists of heaps of destroyed concrete, with not a single house remaining standing." He added, "We had to park the car some 300 meters away and walk on foot to reach destroyed homes there. They bombed trees and green areas as well, turning them into ashy burnt soil." International law experts have confirmed that the Israeli military is flagrantly breaking international conventions by using banned weapons that use depleted uranium, as well as phosphorus bombs, smart-guided bombs, and lately bunker-busting bombs, which are designed to deeply penetrate the ground. According to experts, the bombing of the Lebanese capital Beirut and its suburbs with missiles containing depleted uranium and chemicals not only aimed to destroy the infrastructure of the country, but also poisoned Lebanon's soil, air and water. Speaking from the outskirts of Bent Jebel, one of the residents, Suad, said, "As soon as night falls, none of the family members dares to approach the windows." Sharing her harrowing experience, she said, "We all stay in the main hall of the house because the Israeli army begins randomly firing at our homes and streets." She added, "On Thursday, 5th of December, they fired heavily at my car and it was destroyed with bullets." She added, "The Israelis must understand that we are resilient and steadfast. We're not going anywhere because this is our home and it's our land. And we have no other place to go. We had to stay in a school in northern Lebanon for the last 2 months of the war after enduring many attacks over the past year. However, it has become cold and we want to live in our own home." According to the principle of proportionality in international law, Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, even if there is a clear military target, it is not allowed to attack it if the expected harm to civilians or civilian property is excessive about the expected military advantage. The English website of the Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Hassan, a Lebanese electrical engineer, said that he makes a daily trip to the village of Eight Harun, like many others, to demonstrate to the Israeli army that the local population won't go away. He said, "I cannot forget what happened in 1978 when the Israeli army warned the people of this region against returning to their villages and subsequently occupied our land. This will not happen again. We will not allow it to happen." Hassan said, although his home has been partially destroyed and his brother's home has been completely razed to the ground, they still insist on showing up and making sure their homeland is not going to get reoccupied by the Israeli regime. He told the Al Mayadeen television network, "I go to the village with my brother every day, along with other friends and acquaintances, to demonstrate that we are here and not going anywhere." He added, "Once the 60-day ceasefire period is over, we will return to rebuild our homes and lives." 9-year-old Mahdi refers to Israeli drones hovering in the skies of southern Lebanon as evil hummingbirds. He and his family were displaced during the war and recently returned to their home in the Babda district to repair broken windows, clean the house and resume their daily lives. Mahdi said that the drones buzz continuously overhead both day and night. He mentioned that at night the noise becomes so bothersome that he struggles to fall asleep. UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, has reported that Israel martyred over 200 children in Lebanon amid its aggression over the past 2 months. As airstrikes continue to hit homes and residential areas across Lebanon, doctors are seeing an increasing number of children affected by brutal Israeli aggression. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah's Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem stated on 5th of December that despite numerous Israeli violations in Lebanon, the group wants the ceasefire agreement to succeed. Recently, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah targeted an Israeli military site at Ruwaisat al-Alam in response to repeated ceasefire breaches by the Israeli occupation forces. In a statement after the retaliatory operation, Hezbollah said, in addition to the continued violation of Lebanese airspace by hostile Israeli aircraft reaching the capital, Beirut, Hezbollah was forced to carry out an initial warning defensive response on Monday, 9th of December. However, it remains to be seen if Hezbollah will respond again in the coming days as breaches continue in different forms and ways.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر. The time is running and indeed the mankind is in deep loss. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the soothing waves of IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, your haven for guidance on nurturing a strong Islamic foundation in your children. I'm your host Zainab and I'm excited to have you tuning in today. Well, in this program, we'll be addressing the most important topics about Islamic upbringing, shedding light on the timeless wisdom of Quran and the prophetic tradition, and also the narrations from noble imams. It's a privilege to share these insights with you, and we are grateful for your participation. Well, joining us today is the esteemed Brother Liaquat, a renowned research scholar from the esteemed Seminary of Qom. Together, we'll embark on a journey of discovery, exploring the secrets of raising children with faith, compassion, and wisdom. So sit back, relax, and let's begin. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Liaquat.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, we have been talking about the teachings and lessons that we learn from the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And today we want to talk about time. You know, Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they have been so good in balancing time. And this balancing time is a great challenge that I would say every third person is facing today. So would you shed some light on that today?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you so much. So the concept of balancing time, or the good utilization of time, is indeed a highly emphasized and recommended practice amongst the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salatu was-salam. And the Ahlul Bayt were known for their effective time management and prioritization of their tasks. So in Islam, time is a precious gift from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So just like any other entity which is given to us, just like the body parts, eyes, ears, nose, parents, children, spouse, everything. Likewise, time is also a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And definitely, it is essential to use it wisely, isn't
right.
it? Yeah. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will ask about time on the Day of Judgment.
You know,
like
you utilize
time about, basically the whole life is going to be asked. And also, the youth especially will be asked on the Day of Judgment, showing the importance of time utilization when a person is in his teenagehood and also when he is in his youth. Yeah,
and there will be like no excuse of saying this, that, oh Allah, I didn't know this, oh I was unaware, because it was the mercy of, it was the ultimate mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that he gave us a chapter in Quran by the name of time itself, reminding us of the importance of time again.
Indeed. So we have this Asr, and Surah Al-Asr is about it. And إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. So it's not just belief, it's also doing good deeds, yeah?
Right.
So that's how a person can get towards
making wise use of time.
Yeah,
right.
And he or she can get towards success.
And get out of that deep loss, the khusr that's mentioned.
Definitely. So a person is not in loss in this world if he has belief and if he performs good deeds, isn't
right.
it? So in today's world, like, we can see a lot of people saying, you know what, we love the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. We have belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have belief in the Day of Judgment. We have
right.
Like the beliefs in the prophets, the imams alayhi salatu wasalam. But that in itself is not just sufficient. Of course,
it's not enough.
It is a big help for us after we die. But
it's
that's not enough. Everything.
It's not all. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We have a lot to say on that. But let's take a short break here and we'll be back in a while.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat is here with me, and we are talking about how to balance time. Well, so far we said that time is running out and humankind is in deep loss, but there are ways to manage it, because Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam practically showed us how not to waste time. Well, one of the key things that you said from the Surah Asr itself was that we have to have faith, and or having faith only is not enough. You say we also have to perform good deeds so that we are not among those who are in deep loss. Yes, brother.
So now, how do we utilize this time in a good manner in order to perform good deeds? Is
right.
the big question, right? So the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have taught us to balance our time between different aspects of life, including worship, family, work, rest, and also personal development.
Right.
So they have these, like, they have given us guidelines for balancing time. And what we can say is they have told us to divide our day in three parts.
Okay.
Or another hadith, divide your day in four parts.
Okay.
So one is for your Lord, for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and one for your needs, and the third for yourself.
That okay. Also called 888 rule, right?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, exactly. So this is from the sermon of Amirul Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, where he tells us to divide time, yeah?
Right.
And so with regards to allocating time for worship and spiritual developments, like example, prayers, fasting, charity, and right. doing good deeds, basically, which implies more of a worship angle, it is very important. So, like we can see today's teens, they say, "Oh, you know what? I don't have time." This is a very
basic
common
excuse.
And
what are you doing, actually? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you know what? I go to university. I go to college. I go to school. Example, and I don't have time to pray. Example. Oh, if I don't sleep, then I'm gonna miss my bus in the morning. I'm
right.
gonna miss my the service which is gonna come to take me to school. So I have to sleep, you see. So I don't have time for sleeping. So I sleep a lot. And so they have excuses over here. With regards to daily needs like work, eating, sleeping, some time should be allocated and allotted for our daily activities, which
right.
is very important. And also for personal development and also leisure activities. We have to divide everything. In another hadith from Imam Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam, he says, divide your time for your social activities,
right.
for your personal pleasures,
right.
for your worship and for your self-improvement, like basically for your wajibat, like you are going to work for
right.
earning. For a student, he or she has to go to study, example. Okay?
Right.
So a person can divide everything. And of course, balancing time has a deep connection with how we have a schedule in our day-to-day lives. Example, how much are we focused on our daily schedule?
Right.
Do we have a schedule in the first place? And if are we having it or not? If we are having it, how much are we following it?
Right.
So this is another episode, of course.
Right.
Inshallah, later, I'm going to explain it later, yeah.
Right. Well, that's a very important key. First, to have a program and then to follow that program. Well, we'll discuss more with you, brother. Let's take a short break here and we'll be back in a while.
Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat, Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat.
Regarding the saying of Allah the Exalted, U anfusakum wa ahlikum nara, save yourselves and your family from a fire. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, teach yourselves and your family righteousness.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat is here with me in the studio and we are discussing how to balance time. Well, first of all, we said that time is running out and mankind is in deep loss. However, if he has iman and performs the amal as-salih, if he has the faith and performs the good deeds, definitely mankind is not in loss, because then there's no reason for our creation. Well, we also talked about 888 rule or the ahadiths from imams that tell us how to divide your time. Well, when you're talking about dividing time, you said that it's important to have time for leisure activities. It's time to have, it's not just you should be all praying, all worshipping, all. It's very important that Islam emphasizes on the concept of leisure time.
Exactly. So, example, if we go to see the schedule itself,
right.
inshallah, which I'm going to tell you later, every person has a different schedule or
right.
timetable for himself or herself. Example,
right.
maybe an adult might sleep for 7 hours or 6 hours, example, okay? But a teen should be sleeping for 10 hours. That's the need of the teen. Example, I'm just giving an example. Just because the teen is sleeping for 9 hours or 10 hours, the parents shouldn't be going after the teen and shouldn't be scolding him or her, saying, oh, you know what, you sleep a lot, you shouldn't be sleeping for this much of time, you're wasting your time by sleeping a lot, example. Okay?
Right.
So example, the child who's a baby, a newborn, sleeps for more hours, if we go and see 15 hours or 17 or even 18 hours in a day, in 24 hours. Likewise, as the child grows and he has become a teen now, in his teenager, he sleeps a lot. Like, there are places where teenagers sleep more, and there are places where the teen's sleep will be reduced.
Right.
So, of course, seeing in what age group they are in, a person has to decide, the parent has to decide, okay, this is normal for my child,
right.
Like this, who is a teen example, or even a child, for my child to sleep for this long, okay? Example,
yeah.
It's good, and it is also necessary to let the child go out and play, example. Even if it is for like an hour or something, it's extremely important, like dividing time, you see?
Right.
It's not just, there are parents, I know, who send their child like in the morning to school, and the child comes back in the evening completely tired.
Right.
And they even tell the child to do his or her homework.
Right.
Yeah. And the child is like, it's almost done with life. Almost,
right.
You see? So the child will not like learning anymore, you see? So unfortunately, so this is the program what is being laid in few societies, I would say, in few parts of the countries, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But when we see the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, I remember the life of Imam Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam. He was standing aside and he was seeing the kids playing around. And of course, he was not playing himself. But he was near them, like,
right.
You see, as a child, he was there with
right.
the kids, of course. So even he was prioritizing his time when he was a child, I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah, indeed. So we have a lot to learn from the lives of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, actually. Be it time, be it like any of the teachings that we have been discussing in the previous episodes. Inshallah, we'll explore more in the upcoming episodes. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete